101.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, sitting in on Guardian AM. And today we are going to have ourselves an interesting conversation. We're going to talk about an upcoming event. And I think we have a guest coming in on the Zoom line. So, Mr. Producer, if you can just check them out to see if they're there. We see from the Guardian newspaper, Pinter blasts PM as irresponsible, says Davis continued narrative to smear FNM and NGO. So that's the ongoing saga as it relates to that food program. Food program report costs less than $150,000, says Wilson. That's the financial secretary, I think, responding to issues of cost as it relates to the, I guess, the cost of the audit or the cost of the review. Darville hopeful rising COVID numbers won't delay end of mass mandate. Woman plead with judge to release boyfriend, she said, beat her. Interesting development. Sometimes these are some of the things which boggles the mind, but yeah, we will see where we go on this. Exhumer victim families warn their own pathologists. Has to do with the event at Sandals. Former Prime Minister defend works of food task force. And so there's a lot in the news. There's a lot of things happening, and we are anticipating in the not too long while, we are anticipating the budget. So banks to begin remitting borrowers real property tax arrears, says Department of Inland Revenue. That's an interesting development. We will see how that plays out. There is going to be a trade-off, I think, between the payment of the property tax to the DIR and, in some instances, potentially some non-performing loans in the banks. How they manage that is going to be crucial. A number of clients, based on my experience in banking, is that, you know, you'll have to totally reorient them as to this obligation. But I think it's a good move. I think it's a move which increases the efficiency of the property tax collection process. And consequently, I think the government puts itself in good stead to increase collection. But the banks, I think, have some work to do. There's no if, but, or suppose. You know, a lot of persons will come through, but there are going to be some where the challenge is going to be just a little bit more challenging, and we have to look out for that. Investment company likens FTX arrival to the establishment of Atlantis. I think Atlantis was a big game changer in the early 90s. So this is a big statement. A really, really big statement. Let me see if I can get a little bit of this. Local investment firm, Weiser Global Capital Markets, is comparing the decision of cryptocurrency exchange FTX to build its global headquarters in the Bahamas to Sol Kerzner's decision to develop Atlantis in the Bahamas. So big, huge, major comparison in many ways. But let's see. Let's really see how this pans out on the face of the crypto situation, which is happening now. Let's see where that. Do we have our guest now? Okay, so this morning we are going to have a conversation with Mr. Matt Aubrey of org, Organization for Responsible Governance. There is an important event which is coming up tomorrow. And we want to talk about that, but we also want to talk about some other things, some things which are important from a citizen's perspective. Because in many instances, year after year, we go through this process. We go through the budget cycle. We go through the discussion. We go through the radio show, the TV show, the newspaper articles. But the question is whether or not you as a citizen, you see yourself as an average guy, are you paying sufficient attention? Are you appreciating the need to be well-informed? And do you appreciate the fact that there is more than enough information out there, readily available, and in many instances, easily read or read, can be read and understood with some effort, which can make you and put you in a position of being a better citizen, a better individual who can advocate on your own behalf, who can argue sensibly, and who would have developed a trained ear to understand the deliberations as we go through this very, very important process for the country. So I want to welcome Matt Aubrey to Guardian AM. Matt, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here, Hubert.
Yeah, it's certainly a pleasure. Always good to interact with you. Well, let's start where we need to start. We have an event which is coming up tomorrow evening. Talk to us about that. Tell us what it is. What's the intention? Why is ORG doing this at this point in time?
Well, I think it's a very exciting opportunity. We are holding the very first ORG Economic Roundtable tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m. It will be a free virtual session, so folks can register on Zoom. They can go to our website at orgbahamas.com/roundtable and sign up. But we're featuring not only are you serving as our moderator, which we're very excited about, but we're also featuring some really top-notch folks that can help lend some insight and thoughts about not only the upcoming budget, but also the economic world and future of the Bahamas. We're going to have the Minister of Economic Affairs, the Senator Michael Haukidis. We're going to have Gowan Bo, who is the CEO of Fidelity Group. And we're also going to have Marla Dukeron, who's a renowned Caribbean economist and consultant, who has been offering a lot of different interesting insights towards the future of the Bahamas over the last number of months. So we're bringing these folks together so that the citizens can have a benefit to be a part of that very important dialogue, looking at what kinds of opportunities stand in our economic future, what kind of industries should we be paying attention, how do we effectively manage and reduce our debt to a place where we're gonna be able to function and sustain going forward, and other key opportunities that may lie within this budget or subsequent budgets going forward. So it's a really exciting opportunity, and I've gotten a lot of really positive response for it, so we're looking forward to it.
And I think that is so important. Let's look very quickly at the theme. Give us the theme, and let's have a bit of a, you know, just a quick discussion around it.
Right. The theme is a pathway to economic and fiscal sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I think that really speaks to a key goal for the Bahamas at this point. We've come through such different turbulent times, whether it be the economic crisis in the early 2010-11, those types of times, to the impact of Dorian, to the impact of COVID. And as we're starting to come back into it, we've also been hit with the unexpected impact of inflation, as well as the cost of fuel costs. And historically, what you've seen in the Bahamas is that we've been working on how do we address the immediacy, and usually the answer is we borrow. And so whatever the immediate need is, crisis, get over, we borrow. And that has built to a certain point that it really risks our sustainability, it risks our capacity to continue to generate and be in a positive economic scenario. So as we look at coming out of these two double crises, I think it's really key that we don't just talk about let's get back to 2019 levels or let's get back to where we are, but how do we really plan ourselves a trajectory that takes us far and fast? And how we get there is going to be absolutely key from all the sectors. It's not just in government's hands, and that's why we have different perspectives in our panel. But what does the private sector see as opportunities? What does somebody who's looking at us in the scope of our region think is the opportunities there? And I think it's going to be key that all of our stakeholders come together, because it will ultimately benefit all of our stakeholders if we're able to achieve that pathway.
Yes, and the main aspect of this which excites me is the underlying intention of having this pre-budget discussion, which enables individuals who participate, who consume, whether on the night or subsequently, but certainly before the actual budget is read, will go into that exercise. And I say exercise because I honestly believe that as citizens and residents, we should listen to, that's our way of participating, but we should listen to the budget discourse, the budget debates, the various presentation, not as a passive listener, but as an active participant seeking to glean information and draw understanding of exactly what is happening in the country, how the economics work, why would you opt for option A or policy A versus policy B. So I'm very excited about the fact that we're seeking to facilitate that type of, for want of a better word, a more enlightened listener, a more enlightened citizen, a more enlightened right. resident who is going to be in a better position to be an active listener and to mm-hmm. be able to come away with greater value than they may have in the past.
Well, I think that's so key. And the word you said, participation, early on, I think is highlights that. So ORG has always had this belief that that a key part to our ability to succeed as a country is the capacity and the interest of citizens to get informed and then get involved. And historically, what you see is that when we have good active public participation in budgeting in different countries or jurisdictions, you see greater opportunities coming out of it. You see a more accountable government. You see a government that might be more responsive to their communities because citizens would be informed and paying attention to the things that are priority for them. You would also see a better trust in government, right? When you have a say, you tend to feel a little bit better about what comes out on the other end. Mm-hmm. We know that there are going to be some challenging economic times in front of us. You know, there's a lot of pain that may be in front of us with additional revenues and reclaiming of revenues that haven't been garnered back in past. But if you understand why we're doing that and what it's for and what it results in, you're going to be more likely to trust that system and be more likely to comply and go along with that system. So when we think about the timing, and I think you're 100% right, that this gives people a chance. If they tune in tomorrow from six to eight, and they watch on Zoom, if they register on Zoom, they'll also be able to offer up their ideas and their questions. So those can be potentially incorporated into the discussion. But it primes you to then think about when the PM speaks about what's in the budget. You can reach out to your member of parliament. You can be more informed. You can say, I really like that there's greater investment in education, or I'm concerned about what we're going to do about energy and moving towards renewables, or what's going to happen to make sure that our roads are safer. Those types of things, because it really does translate. The budget translates directly into day-to-day quality of life things that everyday Bahamians face and deal with. Mm-hmm.
And another exciting aspect of it is we have Marla Dukeran. In recent times, she has, developed some notoriety here in the Bahamas. Different persons have different views of some of the pronouncement which she made. But I think in recent times, a lot of that has moderated based on some of the fundamentals which are changing with the economy, and you know, without endorsing anyone, I think that the current Minister of Economic Affairs would have had a role to play in that. I think he made himself available to her for discussions. I think he took the time to sit with her and explain the strategies of the government and where the country is heading. And I say that to say this. We should not underestimate the power of conversations. We should not underestimate the power of discussions to clear the way. Because sometimes persons literally just don't see things the way you see, don't have the same amount of information that you have. And we should see it as our obligation to always set the world right when they get the Bahamas wrong. So that said, we are going to have what I am referring to as a largely independent voice. Obviously, she comes with whatever bias she comes with as a professional and as an individual who would have opined and commented on the Bahamas before. But it's going to be, we anticipate, a refreshing slant because this has never been done before.
I think you're right. And I think I don't want to discount your perspective as the moderator within that, too, because I think both you and Gowan have had great success in helping folks to understand some of these larger concepts, but boiling them down into very tangible and clear pathways. I think getting Ms. Dugran's perspective is hugely important. And I think it is, to your point, I think the Minister of Economic Affairs should be commended for listening and learning and opening the door. And it's that kind of cross-sector dialogue that I think will be key in tomorrow's event and actually going forward. If the perspective of just one group is what we're all driving towards, there's an inevitability that we will miss something. So I think as we go forward with this, we need to make sure that we're reaching out and that we're, as we start this dialogue among these folks tomorrow, that dialogue then subsequently continues, that we look at industry leaders, that we look at folks that are in our business associations, the chambers and the associations that are out there, that we bring it down to small business owners and ultimately people in their households, because the implications of what comes through the budget will absolutely have an effect by either creating an opportunity or potentially a hardship on people in our communities. And I think it's really important that there's an understanding of that. So I think that interplay between an outside perspective, a government perspective, a private sector perspective, and you coming from a civil society voice, if I can ascribe you to that, I think is going to be really important because it gives us a chance to kind of narrow in on what are the common themes and common goals.
Yeah, and I think that is so important because what we're trying to do as we go through this, whether we are here on the radio program or participating in an event such as this, which will come up, and we're inviting you to, you know, come out. It's 6 o'clock. We'll start at 6 o'clock. And you will have the opportunity to hear what's been discussed. The minister will be presenting first. You will have a 10-minute slot. The other two presenters will be 5 minutes. And then we'll go into a moderated session. And, you know, we're seeking to achieve an enrichment of our conversations. We want to get to the place where we are talking about the fundamentals. As I usually say on my radio show, let's get down to the essentials. Let's get down to the things which matter. When we think about the budget, oftentimes from a citizen or resident point of view, there's always this us and them as it relates to government. But the truth is, we are fundamentally involved in this process. And to the extent that we have these conversations, we're not proposing that anything which comes out of it is going to be readily accepted or taken on. But to the extent that we have a government representative who willingly agreed to be a part of that discussion, I believe that we have the opportunity to enrich those conversations. We have also the opportunity by bringing in these outside, quote-unquote, external parties to broaden the discussion, to bring in flavors from other areas so that we can now start to see things in a different light. And importantly, we have to start to inject new perspective because the truth of the matter is this exercise called the budget discussion. The variable aspect, and I'm just going to hearken to something which Shivagaling would have said and was reported by Candia Deems, a large portion of the budget is really fixed. About 600 million will go for remuneration for government workers and so on and so forth. Maybe 300 plus million will go for state-owned entities. Maybe another 500 million will be allocated for debt repayment, debt servicing. So that's 6 and 5, 1.1, and another 4 or 3, $1.4 billion. Of a $2.5 billion budget may already really crystallize. And I'm just touching on the big ones. And so the extent to which we can have conversation around the areas where the government have some flexibility, I think it serves us well in pinpointing and broadening the conversation and ensuring that we can keep these conversations productive and relevant to where we want to go, to ensure that we are moving in the direction of this path to sustainability. And, you know, this really, Matt, if we're able to do this at the end of the day, and if we're able to create this type of a spillover in other national conversations, I think we would have achieved something interesting.
I think so. And I think that I very much trust where you're and how you're going to lead that. But I think education is so key. And even as you presented those areas that are, you know, recurrent expenditures that can't really move very much because at this point they're fixed, I imagine that somebody sitting at home listening to that was not aware of just how much money was being given to certain areas. And so if somebody then says, hey, well, we're spending all of this money for government services, but I don't feel like I'm being well served at this government service, then they're more apt to raise a voice, to say something needs to change. If they are, you know, hearing about state-owned enterprises and then they start to look at what those numbers are, they may say, well, then how do we, you know, we've talked about this before, how do we get those into being more fiscally performing models so that we're not just giving subventions to things that may not be effective? Or if we're putting money to something and we've seen an improvement, it's also important for folks to know that too. So having some clarity on what these areas are, what these numbers are, is 100% important. And mm-hmm. And I do want to direct a few folks to a couple of different resources that are also out there online that you could use in your advanced preparation for the budget season. The first is the Bahamas has a budget page. It's bahamasbudget.gov.bs. And if you go there, you'll see the budget communication from the mid-year budget. You'll see budget communication from last year's budget. You'll even see reports that are in there from the University of the Bahamas Government Public Policy Institute that talk about a strategic opportunity and it cues you up. And in the beginning of that, the first couple of pages, you'll see some really key opportunities that you want to make sure that if you're reading them here, if they're saying, hey, we need to, in that report, it talks about the benefit of dropping the 12% down to the 10% in VAT as not being that significant, but it says you need to really push on revenue and we have to make sure that there's lots of revenue. Well, then as you start to read the newspapers now, you understand why there's a big push by government to try and focus on reclaiming revenues and taxes that have been outstanding or in the rear for a long time. And so it does tie you into, again, why are we trying to do this and where is your place with it? The budget is one period in time, but it by no means is your only time to have a voice. And the hope is that through the dialogue tomorrow and being able to engage with this tool, another one is that org has a website called BeClearBahamas.org that has a host of resources and references that explain what the budget process is. There's a lot of different things that you can use to look up. Getting involved and being aware will make you much more cognizant of what's happening around you, mm-hmm. And also give you an opportunity, if you wish, to express your voice, for you to be able to do so in an informed way. And I think that's another real exciting part that comes out of tomorrow. It's a great kickoff to a meaningful season.
Fundamentally important, and whatever it is that we associate with, we try to keep it fundamental. We try to keep it as informative, as research, respectful, sensitive. We, at the end of the day, want to create value. So we're going to take a break here. I have a quick text. I don't understand it. I want the texter to either call in and, maybe not call in, but you can flesh it out. And it says, Edward, why are you, Parker, and Nuri still on Guardian Radio? Why buy Grab? I'm not sure what that means. You listen to Guardian AM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we are having a conversation with Matt Aubrey of ORG, Organization for Responsible Governance. So we'll take a break here. And when we come back, let's look at a couple other things. Also, if you have a burning question that you think you would ask the minister, why don't you give me a call and drop that? We will still be sure to add that in the mix. Don't move.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good for
you. It's back! One of the biggest regattas on the sailing calendar. It's the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond, Long Island, June 1st to 4th.
Yeah!
The biggest economic boost for Long Island is back with more than 40 sloops competing in the A, B, C, and D classes, along with the Long Island Youth Regatta and the Man in the Boat Sculling Races. Don't miss this major cultural experience June 1st to 4th, the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond. All of the fastest sloops will be there. Artisans displaying their handmade crafts, jewelry, and scrollwork. Great food, including the world-famous native mutton dishes. And endless memories all await you at the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond.
Long Island breeze, your sheep are bleating.
Guardian Media will be broadcasting live at the 53rd Annual Long Island Regatta with live updates of the sailing results and activities every day. It's the 53rd Annual Long Island Regatta in beautiful Salt Pond, Long Island, June 1st to 4th.
Yeah! Regatta update, sponsored by the Salt Fiber Rebar. No steal, no big deal. The Dalbina's Agency, distributors of Hunt's Ketchup and Lickety Split, a cool spot for hot shots.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Guardian AM. I'm Hubert Edwards. You're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and obviously our text line 422-4796. If you have a burning question that you would raise in this forum coming up as we have our pre-budget discussion with the Minister of Economic Affairs, the Honorable Michael Elkitis, Mr. Gowan Bow, CEO from Fidelity Group, and Ms. Marla Dukeran, renowned economist, Caribbean economist and advisor. When you take a look at the recent Article 4, which was published by the IMF, and I'm going to try to summarize it in as few words as is possible. Having gone through that document and the initial release, the main points, if you will, and then the full document itself, my conclusions are that there are four main things which have been said to the Bahamas by the IMF. One, reduce costs, reduce spending in non-productive areas. That's one. Two, increase taxes. Three, implement the reforms to address the structural challenges, the structural weaknesses and deficiencies, which we all know. And move policy initiatives and programs forward, which will encourage growth. Those are the four things which I took away from that assessment in summary. And therefore, if we are going into the budget season with that type of advice in the consciousness of the leadership, the question is how much of this will filter into the whole process. One other thing, Matt, before I get your feedback, which I took away from this, which I think is a really, really very powerful statement. I didn't notice any of the media houses actually reporting on it per se. It may have been mentioned. But in fact, when you go to the document, the IMF actually said that the Bahamian debt is sustainable. And the question I asked, because when I read it, my immediate reaction was, this don't feel right, this don't sound right. But as you go through the document, you realize that, yes, they are taking the position that it is sustainable on the basis that the proposed or discussed reforms and changes and adjustments which are needed to policy will actually be implemented and terminate into the numbers which were projected by the government in recent times. And so I think we are at a really, really tricky place here. And so, you know, with this as the backdrop, what is it, maybe, I'm not asking you to dig too deeply, but maybe what is it that you would anticipate the line of the narrative that you are anticipating in this budget process, given what the IMF is saying?
Well, and again, the IMF is one perspective, but I think you highlight some key things. And one of the things that historically we haven't had great success with is in the execution. The plans may have been very sound and very structurally based, but in the full execution of seeing policies come for a consultation to then get passed and then fully enacted, we've seen stalls in that in areas like the Public Procurement Act. We've seen slow levels of enactment related to fiscal responsibility. Certain things have moved forward, but the Fiscal Responsibility Council has not been at the same pace. And then ultimately, again, performing in the assessment of non-performing parts of government, I think it's really crucial that there is a full, clear understanding of what measure they're going to be utilizing to determine that and how we follow through with that. When administrations have changed every 5 years, and there hasn't been an overall plan like maybe the National Development Plan or an ascribed financial plan that transcends these, because these problems are not going to be fixed in 1, 2, 3 years. They're longer term issues. It prevents us from being able to make that kind of progress. So I think what we can take from the IMF is a real call to action that we need to work on and look at how is government performing? How are we ensuring that not only are they serving what they need to so that investments generate what they're supposed to, but also that there is a strong instance of compliance when taxes are outstanding, that their citizens are believing that they're paying their taxes and being part of the system are for a purpose. And I think that distrust still exists. And so I think between execution and the relationship between the citizen, the private sector, and government, those are two key areas that I think we're going to need to work on to be able to manifest a sustainable that level.
Yeah, and I think that those are some critical, important perspective. As we look at the newspaper today, we see Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve, is indicating that the Fed is going to keep hiking rates until it controls inflation. Now, clearly, there is a big argument in the United States, which is happening around inflation, a political argument, in some instances, a little bit nonsensical, where Biden, President Biden is blaming President Putin for the inflation. The Republicans are blaming the Democrats, and everyone else is using the speaking, the message, the central message is that this thing is all transitory. So the current U.S. administration, the Democrats, are under a bit of a pressure to, you know, to tame inflation. And the trigger for that is from us is clearly that they are likely to increase interest rate a little bit more aggressively than was initially thought. And it's run the risk ultimately of kind of pushing the country, pushing the economy into a recession. And that's not one of the things that we really, really want to hear. So even though we are burning up from an inflationary effect at this moment, we really don't want to see the global environment cool down to such an extent that we shift from high inflation to a recession. And so, you know, there is this delicate balance taking place there. But I guess that's for tomorrow. But Matt, when we talk about looking at reforms, when we talk about looking at potential tax increases, when we talk about the areas of spending, what would be, if any, you think would be the Prime Minister's, the Minister of Finance response in tomorrow's presentation, not tomorrow's, but next week presentation, as it relates to the 2022-2023 fiscal year?
Well, I mean, I think the discourse that happened earlier this year related to NIB with the Office of the Prime Minister speaking out and Minister of State LaRota speaking out and saying that, in fact, there may need to be an increase in NIB. And then the Prime Minister coming in saying, well, we don't want to inflict any further harm on the Bahamian people at this time, to me also kind of indicates the tone. Like, I think that this is a fragile time. It's important to know that we're doing things to facilitate the private sector's continued growth. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still benefiting by a very strong tourism season, which is great, but we're also going into a time when hurricane season kicks in, our prime industry becomes a lower, you know, revenue source, and people are still just getting themselves back in sight. So I think there still is going to be a bit of a protective model in place. So I would see additional investments in social services. I would see some mechanisms or attempts to try and, you know, help people through what they're seeing as this very high inflation rate right now. But I don't see the long-term push of changing, say, the NIB structure or implementing a tax reform in this next year. But I would hope that what we do see is very strong exploration as to what those models could be, such that when we're in this time a year from now, that will be part of what's in place. So understanding that the it hurts now, but how do we ensure that we get ourselves all the way out of this in a place where it's stable? That has been hinted by the government. It would be really important to see what that looks like. But I feel like that will be more based on plans versus changed models in this year. That tends to be my guess.
Yeah, it's a fascinating proposition and very intriguing. Just thinking about, I think through the eyes of all of the things that we have discussed over and repeatedly, the projection by the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance that revenue to GDP need to get to 25%. The discussions from the IMF, the discussions that we would have heard from the financial secretary, the fact that the Bahamas tested the debt market with the repo, all of these things, when we kind of put them into the pot and start to steam them down, it becomes very, very interesting and intriguing as to the extent to whatsoever changes are going to be made. As Matt indicated, he may not see anything happening in this immediate go around. But it does raise a question. If that doesn't, if things don't change in the immediate go round, when we get to 2026-27, will the projected intentions, the things that we want to see at that point, will they materialize? We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian AM.
Hi, pleasant. Good morning, Hubert and Matt. How are you doing?
We're doing great.
Okay, good conversation, by the way. I appreciate sentiments that both of you are expressing. What prompted me to call in was the point that Martha was just making as it relates to NIB and the modeling, which I completely agree with. As a matter of fact, I saw Gowan Bo one day recently at a restaurant, and we were discussing the exact same thing. And I believe that the Prime Minister, with all of my understanding, the Prime Minister, Dr. Davis, is on the right track with the fact that we need to consider the business community, and it's still trying to get a foothold after Dorian, and in particular after COVID-19. We have to fully appreciate the impact that has been put on the business community, which is the community that carries predominantly the employment in the country, and not the hotel sector. It's the business community, those small and medium-sized businesses. And so we need to do what is necessary in order to help stabilize that aspect of our economy. Of course, tourism is rebounding, and there's good there. But we need to focus on developing and assisting the business community before we look at leveling any new cost or forcing any new taxes on the backs of an already suffering business, small and medium-sized business community. Once we do that, I believe that, like Matt is suggesting, like myself and Gowan was discussing, we would have the information through the modelings that could be going underway as we speak that would help to inform the way that we need to move and help to give us the keys that we need to prepare us for where we need to go in terms of increases at the NIB level. Because if not, that will have a similar, and I'll end right here, Hubert. If we don't get the modelings right, if we don't get the studies right, we will have the same impact that the increase of back from 7.5 to 12% had, where we should have been realizing a stable source of revenue at 7.5. We realized a contraction when we increased back to 12%. To 12% from 7.5%. Thank you for the opportunity, Hubert. And Matt, very interesting discussion. I'll continue to listen. God bless.
Yeah, certainly some good points. Thank you, sir. I am one who, I don't say this because I assume that when there is going to be a policy change, when there is going to be an adjustment, that is going to be fundamental, it's going to be studied, it's going to be done in such a way that you do not create a situation where there's more harm in the implementation than what existed before. So that's a given. As it relates to NIB, too fundamental, too important to be left alone, and I'm sure they're going to speak to it. I appreciate the points that you made, Antoine, and certainly, you know, you are closer to the epicenter than I would ever hope to be. But, you know, we have to be in a place where we ensure that going forward, the underlying pillars of the economy are strong, they're firm, and they can support the type of resiliency that we want. As you will appreciate, there are three important sectors. There's the public sector, there's the private sector, and then there is the social sector. If all of those are not percolating, you have problems. We have another call on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Can I make a comment for you, man? Take my case. When I need to go look at my things in Exuma or Eleuthera, I jump on the plane and I pay for that myself. We are what you call servants of or property of the Royal Majesty, right?
When you say we, who you mean? Hold on. Who you mean?
We are subjects of the Queen.
Hold on. Who are you talking? Who are you referring to? When you say we.
The Bahamians.
Oh, okay. So you are a subject of the Queen.
We are supposed to be.
Okay, I am not. Absolutely.
Well, okay, fine, you may not be, but okay. If you live here and you're a citizen of this country, you are a subject of the Queen.
No, sir.
Yes, sir.
No, sir.
That's what I like.
Okay, anyway, go ahead with the point.
Now, if we are the subjects of the Queen, because the Queen could demand that we go to war if they go to war, you know. So, August, if we go, I lost my train of thought. Hello?
Yeah, if we are subject of the Queen,
yeah,
then...
shouldn't the Queen say that every year our debt go up by about $1 billion?
Yeah.
I'm wondering who is the mathematician in the government that is spending money that we don't have. Because I can't do it. I pay in taxes every day, and I don't have enough to go around to handle my affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't when we pay the taxes. It's not enough for them to take care of the roads, to this, to that, the garbage.
Right.
And all of that.
Yeah, that's why they borrow.
Who is the mathematician? Yeah, then we got to go borrow.
Mm-hmm.
Who claims to be the mathematician says it's okay to spend that kind of money? Didn't Jamaica tell them no? They're not going to pay for it?
You know, if you really going to be harping on the money's pay for the visit of the royal family, I mean, you know, I won't argue with you against you, but I don't think the amount spent really factors into any significant problem that the country is facing. It was a small amount by any measure, so I don't think that represents a problem, honestly. I wouldn't take that into consideration at this point in time. We have another quick caller. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
How are you doing, sir?
All right. You know, about government expenditure and government deficit, right?
Uh-huh.
That has to do with government policy.
Yeah.
Government expenditures, would it desire our expenditure?
That's correct.
Right. So we can't talk about government expenditure and deficit. You know, we need to talk about a social expenditure and deficit, you see?
Slow down. What do you mean by a social expenditure?
Yeah, if the government is not spending money for the social well-being of its people,
uh-huh.
you know, the expenditure and deficit has no relevance to such people.
Yeah, but the government does spend social money for the citizens. The question is, or the question you may have is whether at any point in time it's sufficient.
Right. So in other words, and in other words, we look at the inequality, the wealth inequality,
yeah.
inequality in wages.
That's
in
a factor.
You see, so when in other words, when the government refuses to tax doing personal income tax, that has nothing to do with the business income tax. You see? Hello?
Yeah, well...
As well as when the government decides to give companies tax,
concession?
Breaks.
Concession,
tax
yeah.
Exemption, you know, some for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
That, you understand what I'm saying? Things like it. And then when we have a situation where we have the one progressive tax and property tax,
mm-hmm.
you know, these people, again, are not paying. The people that's making the bug that has the most is not paying.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to address these things so the government rhetoric on it. And this budget and the like, we need to become progressive on it. It's a fact that some governments are, at least not in the Bahamas, and like say in the U.S. and the U.K., they're much more progressive than the other.
Yeah, thank you.
When are we going to come to that point? When are we going to get have a progressive media? When are the government going to be responsible? When are we going to have a progressive organization that's going to speak the truth to these powers?
Thank you so much for your contribution.
You,
yeah, I have a quick text here. Here is my question for the minister. Most countries in the world have agreed to the 15% corporation tax. When is the Bahamas going to be compliant? And if we aren't, why not? That can be hundreds of millions or billions in new revenue, I don't think it's billions at all. You could have a couple millions coming in, maybe hundreds of millions potentially, but I don't think it's a billion. Before I come back to you, Matt, we have one other caller. Caller, go ahead. We can take that call quickly. Yeah. Before we close, we're running out of time. No, we're not there. Caller, go ahead quickly.
Good afternoon.
Good morning.
We are not British subjects. We were British subjects, but we are Bahamian. That's people don't. He says that. Before 73, we were British subjects. We carry a British passport. Now we don't. On getting back to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jamaica, I like Jamaica. Jamaica minister of finance. He have a PhD in applied mathematics, and he has job experience in doing his job.
Like, our Minister of Finance, I wonder with them. Like, they never work on Wall Street. They never work on nowhere else besides counting government money. So, and like, Dr. Clark, I mean, his portfolio is vast. He has a PhD in mathematics. And he's been on different boards around the world. I mean, like, we need to find men like them.
Okay. Thank you so much for your contribution. Obviously, this individual who spoke about being a subject of the Queen took umbrage with the point I made. He texts back and says, correction, you are an object, subject of the Queen, bro. You subservient, outdated, ignoramus, bro. Don't disrespect me. If I disrespected you, if I said something which you felt you were disrespected in, I fully apologize, but I'm not, absolutely not, a subject, neither am I subservient, outdated, or ignoramus. Matt, let's bring this to a close. Let's invite the persons to join and be a part of the conversation tomorrow.
Yeah, I wanted to say that when we think about it, when we're going to be live, the last caller's question is, when will we get to that point? It's through this kind of discussion. It's through people thinking about it, drawing from different references, bringing your perspectives forward. It doesn't mean everyone is going to be heard and accurate. Not everyone is going to come away with their point being the one that wins. Mm-hmm. But if we bring those things together in a diverse dialogue, we have a great chance of coming up with something unique and sustainable. So we want people to tune in tomorrow via Zoom from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. or the Org Economic Roundtable, which will feature yourself as a moderator, the Minister for Economic Affairs, the Honorable Michael Halkidis, Gowan Bo, the CEO of Fidelity Group, as well as Marla Dukaran, renowned Caribbean economist. Folks, you can go ahead and register by going to orgbahamas.com/roundtable, and you can register, and then your opportunity to ask questions will come up as you participate. You'll see a Q&A space in that space. So make sure you come out and have your questions, start to prime yourself for the budget season. And it's going to be, I think, a really important event. And we look forward to where we go from there.
Definitely. You've been listening to Guardian AM. We want to encourage you to become an active part of the nation building, to contribute, to read, to think, to participate, to be involved in the discussion, not from the perspective of tearing down or being disrespectful, being negative, but from the perspective of how we can help to build a better nation. This is what you're called upon to be when you're referred to as a citizen. And of course, as a resident, you too have an obligation. You've been listening to Guardian AM. Walk good, one love, and Ubuntu.